I'm just wondering if you would comment on the two points in the narrative that seem to me to be significant. One is, first, the idea that our conceptions, our rhetorical framework for understanding our own present is obviously shaped by what comes in back of us. And that's largely shaped by the power of the interests that are able to express themselves in the space. And so the growth of the corporation, which gives the ability first to sever the ownership of intellectual property from the individual author and rest it in a company structure that is free of a whole lot of the ideas of civic participation that infuse the concept of individual back at the time of the framers, also gives a power to aggregate commercial property so that from the beginning of the process forward, you get an increasing aggregation of the power of commercial property, and with it, the power to express the interests of commercial intellectual property. And with that, the power to influence the frame with which we understand it, playing itself out in doctrine and so forth. Coming to the internet, where the internet, to me, is an inflection point in the history of the technology of intellectual property, creating for the first time the technological possibility to aggregate the public domain. And it doesn't happen right away because it requires the creation of tools and enterprise, and we're really just at the very beginning of it right now. But for the first time, we're beginning now to have a sense of the potential power of the public domain and the feeling that a force could grow, which could once again reshape the balance and in effect balance the rhetorical force of commercial property. And so a story unfolds, at least at the simple stage, of a balance struck back at the time of the framers, which gets distorted by the growth of commercial intellectual property, unmatched, really the dwindling of the concept of public property, and now promises to come back into some sort of balance with the growth of a commonwealth of intellectual property. How does that narrative fit with the research that you've done?
Okay, so let me mention three points. The two latter ones are more relevant, but I do want to mention the first one as well. And first, a reservation. I still hold to the view that it would be too simplistic to say the founding fathers had this very limited idea of copyright in the sense of fighting monopolies, and it became something completely different. It is true to say they had a much more limited idea of intellectual property, of copyright. Part of it because of this idea of limiting monopolies, but much more than that, and that would bring me to the first point, because they were still thinking about copyright as the printer's right, to print a copy. So here's my first point. My first point, we often think and talk about the disappearance or the decline of the public domain, and our emblematic case is Eldred. Right? Duration, what could be more symbolic or more demonstrative than that? But what happened is way beyond duration. Duration is what jumps to your eyes from twice 14 years to life of the author plus 75. But in fact, there are probably more important dimensions than that. So think about the appearance, I don't know when you came in, but the appearance of the concept of the work that expands the scope of copyright protection from verbatim copies, making copies, translation is not an infringement under that framework, to anything which is in any way traceable to the original work. And that happens during the 19th century as a conceptual development, and a few others which are at least as important as the expansion of duration. Okay, so now to be more responsive to your question. Interests and corporations and economic interests are very important part of the story, no doubt. In the first part of the century, it's probably not so much corporations yet as the rise of a national, rationalized publishing industry, okay, which hardly exists before, with clear interests, with clear orientation towards the market, creating markets, utilizing the market, and using means like copyright protection in order to protect their investment and rationalize their activity. Okay, to where the end of the 19th century it becomes corporations and corporate power, and the work for hire doctrine is a lot, is a nice exemplification of that. And yes, beyond all the other things, because you want to simplify, I do want a more complex model, that this is a large part of the story of what's going on. I don't think you can reduce everything to that. I think that it's an important interaction with our ideology, concepts, and ideas, with technology that you've mentioned, with politics, and with other things as well, they all interact together. And that brings me to your third point. So is the internet a chance to break free of it all? Well, potentially, yes. No, this is what we've been talking about for years in the Bergman Center, right? But not necessarily, because it's not just technology. Just like the earlier story of copyright is a lot about the printing press, but it's not just the printing press. It's about economic interests with power. It's about political activity, and it's about consciousness. So the internet is out there. The internet, in many respects, that many people like Yochai or Terry wrote about, is certainly a chance, but it's also dependent on those other factors, I guess. Politics, ideology, consciousness. So that would be my answer, I guess. Hope it's good enough.
Terry?
Do you want to follow up on this?
Well, I listen, and the things that you described first, like the expansion of the reach of copyright, I completely agree, and that's an expression of the aggregated power of commercial property interests expressing itself through law when they find themselves up against no significant opposition whatsoever, because the public domain has no champion, no capacity to aggregate, no real value. Right. And then come up to the formation of the internet. To me, those other things you're talking about, politics, interest group, conceptual ways of thinking about it, those are all themselves product of the rhetorical frame that creates our environment. And as soon as you put internet in, so for example, you have Wikipedia now as this amazing dynamic demonstration of the speed and power of the capacity to aggregate public knowledge. Suddenly you see an interest group forming and a power base, an example, and it's now the case, I think, unlike 1998 when we were doing Eldred. Now if you talk about public domain, you can actually come up with examples that are fairly convincing, and we're still only at the very beginning. So I'm in agreement with you, except that it seems to me that the things that you're pointing to are themselves product of the environment that produces things like politics and conception and so forth.
Okay, so I'm in total agreement with that. Only I would turn back and then complete the circle the other way, and I would say, yes, all of those things are products of things like the internet or the printed press. But they also shape, they're not just products, they're also shaping forces that shape things like the use of the printing press and the internet. And we know that, you know, the structure of the internet, what is the internet, is part of what is up for grabs now, right? The very basic structure of the internet, how it works, and how much freedom or restriction it incorporates, is what's up for grabs now. And ideology and politics and economic interests would influence that. So it's not like we have the internet out there, it would by itself change everything. The internet, what is the internet, is part of what is up for grabs.
Thank you.